If it is one thing that people living in prison have a lot of, it's time. And some prisoners are finding meditation a useful way to use this time. They are finding it an effective way to deal not only with themselves, but also with the harsh and dehumanizing environment of the prison. Sister Elaine McInnes is a Catholic nun and a Zen master. She has taught prisoners meditation for more than 20 years. She spent many years studying Zen in Japan and has worked with prisoners in the Philippines and England. Here in Canada, she founded the organization Freeing the Human Spirit that teaches meditation to prisoners. Sister Elaine joins us on the phone from her home in Toronto to tell us more about her work with prisoners. Thanks for joining us, Elaine.
Oh, my pleasure, indeed.
Now, people might be a little bit confused as to how someone could be a Catholic nun and a Zen master.
That's always the first question.
I'm sure many people ask you this question. How did that come about, and how does that work?
Well, it was, of course, there was a lot of luck in it, too. Like many, I'll say, non-Japanese going to the country that's been famous for centuries for its meditation, we were intrigued and we want to learn it. So it's not that unusual over in Japan. And my own community, they said, well, fine, if that's what I wanted to do while I was there. So I got to know the Buddhist nuns quite well. And in fact, it was they who invited me to take part in their retreats, which are called session. And they are extremely difficult. We'd be up at 3 in the morning, and you go to about midnight for about 5 days every month. They have one of these in Japan, and it's tough. The amount of sleep you get is very limited, and of course just sitting still and quiet for long periods of time, that's difficult too. Well, I think a lot of the advertising about meditation, happily, a lot of it is true. You do get wonderful results, and when you start feeling them yourself, then you become enthusiastic to have other people help themselves by doing it.
So you must not find that there is a contradiction between those two practices or those two spiritual beliefs.
Not at all. Buddhist meditation is silence. There is no word. There are no words used, you know. So there's no possibility of having ideas in silence. There are no theories or anything like that. It's a lot of discipline. You have to learn to how to stop thinking and how to be in silence. And then there's just a deepening of that, and you have trained people to take you through these different levels of depth, and it eventually leads to a specific experience. And even that experience it can be articulated in your own in one's own religion. Mm.
Sounds like we could talk about that for a lot, but I know you've written a couple books on that subject. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about your work with prisoners. I know you first started working with prisoners in the Philippines during the dictatorship of Marcos in the 80s.
Yes.
How did you get involved in that work with prisoners?
Well, it was a time of political unrest, you know, and a group of prisoners had been segregated from the others, and amongst that group, just a small group of about 10, but there were very well-educated people there, and they had heard of my presence. And when they were caught and put in jail, they asked that I go to see them and teach them Zen. So I got some help from the. It was a touchy subject. I went to the Canadian ambassador there, and I asked him if he would help me to get into the prison, because I didn't want to be deported. And so anyway, he helped me, and so eventually I got in, and I was a little over 4 years. I went in there every week, once a week, and I spent about 4 or 5 hours with them, and I taught them how to meditate, and I gave little talks about meditation and how to deepen their own understanding. And then after that, I always had a meal with them. They prepared their own meals, and I would bring some food in too, And then we had a nice little happy hour after that, talking to one another. And then I came away from that. But it was a wonderful experience, and it was wonderful to see them change. They were they had all been tortured, so their nerves were in very bad shape. And, you know, their whole body would shake every once in a while, uncontrollably for a little while. And quite suddenly, I mean, there'd be no external cause for them to do that. But it was just something from the inside that had, I think, was the result of the torture they had been through. But anyway, eventually they became quite quiet, and they became, and of course they had time, as you said, prisoners always have time. And so they did their own meditating quite a lot, 3 or 4 hours every day, even when I wasn't there. And so they improved enormously. They're a lovely, lovely bunch of people. And eventually they did become quite deep in their meditation, and several of them came to that specific experience that the Buddhists call Kensho. Yes.
What were some of the first things you were struck by in this initial work with prisoners?
Well, I think they're... well, all of a sudden, to realize how free it is to be free. You know what I mean? I could get up in the morning and go to a bus and go somewhere I wanted to, and especially if I decided I was going to go to the prison that day. And then at the end of my period, I was free to leave and come home. And they're not free to do anything. And imprisonment is imprisonment, you know. And it's a lack of freedom. And, of course, especially if it's a political thing, you never know. Justice is the last thing you can expect. Then you're in prison because of your politics, generally. And that was something that you can't do very much about. But I was bringing them a gift, or the possibility of a gift, that would give them peace of mind. It's very hard to understand how people in prison, and with all the suffering that involves, that can come to a peace of mind and acceptance of what their lot is. But actually, that it's a mysterious process to watch, but I have seen it happen again and again, that meditation does bring a peace of mind to people, and they can accept, to a certain degree, they can accept, you know, why they're in prison, and then do what is possible to get out, or, well, it depends. Those were all political prisoners in the Philippines, and they had, I'm sure they had outside contacts about eventually breaking through. And of course, we know they did. There was the 1986, there was the revolution, and the jail was turned inside out, and they were all freed.
After you left the Philippines in 1993, you moved to England to work with the Phoenix Prison Trust.
Yes, it was lovely. Of course, it was quite different. They had this lady I had met before, Anne Weatherall, had started. She felt very badly for prisoners, and she was terribly interested in religious experience. And she thought, well, now these people, as you said, have time, and they have time to sit and meditate, and they can come to these wonderful experiences. So she was writing to prisoners, and then suddenly she took very ill and asked if I would go to England, and I had received that permission, and I was on my way there, but she died. But anyway, when I got to England, I said, well, look, I'm not interested in writing prisoners. I'm interested in going into prisons and having contact with them and leading them in their meditation there. So working with prisoners, I found their bodies are in dreadful shape. You know, they're dispirited a lot, and they're angry a great deal, and their bodies kind of slump over. And so I suggested we have some yoga. And so that's indeed what we did. Whenever we got permission from prison authorities to teach in that prison, we always sent two teachers, a meditation teacher and a yoga teacher, and they would go in. And, of course, they would do the yoga first to get the body ready for meditation, and then we do the meditation after that. And it was And it was, of course, it takes months, I mean, to you know, to bring either one of those disciplines into to fruition. But anyway, eventually they did. It was wonderful to see them hold themselves better and be able to sit. And when we sit in meditation, we sit, of course, very straight. The back has to be very straight for all things to work. And so the meditation was enormously helpful. Then, following some of the asanas that yogis use, we would go into meditation, and it was kind of a natural movement from one to the other, and it just proved terribly successful. The body has to be built up and has to be silenced. That is the hardest thing. Our body makes a lot of noise and wants a lot of movement sometimes when we are uneasy. But it's the same basic two disciplines that seem to go together, to do some yoga and then to go into meditation. You silence the body and silence the mind, both by means of breath.
You then returned to Canada and started up another organization called Freeing the Human Spirit.
Freeing the Human Spirit, yes. There's something about meditating that spurs you on to do something for others. I don't quite know how to say or why it works, but it coming and having this Zendo here, I just felt we simply had to do something. And, you know, I was asked, as I had been in England and the Philippines, asked to go and do this work with special people in prisons in Ontario. And so many of my students in the Zen Center here joined me. And then, of course, we hunted out some yoga teachers. And it just worked beautifully. We sent two by two into the different prisons. I usually was invited into a prison first. And, of course, I had a lot of experience in England and in the Philippines. So my story of my adventures in these two countries were accepted here. And so the superintendent of the prison, you know, gave permission. And then I had trained some teachers in the yoga and meditation and assigned them to the prisons. And it's working here just as it worked in England and in the Philippines too, yes.
I was going to ask you what kinds of differences or similarities you experienced in your work with prisoners in those three different countries.
Actually, there's not much difference. We all share the same kind of pain and isolation, you know, and that is what the meditator is hunting, you know, wanting relief from that. I was just sitting here and thinking of what my deepest experience of that was, probably when I was in England, and in the middle of London there's a prison called Wormwood Scrubs, and my assistant and I were invited there for kind of a special morning. One day they had the superintendent had chosen 24 young men. I would say they would all be between 25 and 30, and they were all in for murder. And he asked us if we could work with them, that they had received a lot of psychological help and these other things, but he was reading about our success with meditation and yoga. So he invited us, and we had the morning with them. And they were absolutely wonderful young people. They followed all our instructions. They did their yoga asanas beautifully. Then we got into meditation and whatnot. And for the last half hour, we sat around and talked. And their faces were just full of peace for that. And they talked about, one of them asked me that he had seen somewhere or other the word mystic. And he said, "What does mystic mean?" So I tried to explain. It's somebody that is able to operate from their spiritual being. And then I went around to each one of them, and I said to them, "You know, my teacher in Japan, the Buddhist master, always used to say that you are born to be a mystic." And I went to each of the 24 and I said, and you are born to be a mystic, and you are born to be a mystic. And not one of them snickered or laughed or anything. They looked at me with these big solemn eyes, and they were ready to agree, but of course they didn't quite know what the whole thing meant. But it was just so, it spoke volumes to me of what's in the human heart when some of the anger and the problems have been put to rest for a little while. And then, we found two teachers for them, and they took over, and that's still going on in that prison, I understand.
Freeing the Human Spirit got going in about 2003. What was it like trying to get set up inside the Canadian prison system?
Well, that took a little longer. The first thing I did was go down to the famous Don Jail here, which is always presented to be as being very notorious, and of course terribly, terribly overcrowded. It still is. But they said that if I got organized, they'd be very glad to start a class there, and indeed they have done that. And so then we'd go to another prison, and then to another one, and then to another. And, of course, we have our own newsletter now, too. So eventually other prison superintendents have heard about us, or sometimes the chaplain has heard about us. We usually go in through the volunteer coordinator, though. Anyway, little contacts are made here and there, and now we're more or less solidly into 14 prisons here in Ontario, and we do go into another 6 or 7 occasionally when the prison is sufficiently organized that we can send people in regularly.
There's a long and continuing history of people taking their religion into the prison system, and a lot of this is under a sort of redemptive mindset of saving lost souls, I'll put it. And because of this, there's a lot of people get their back up about religious work in prisons. Do you see what you're doing with prisoners as religious, and have you heard much feedback or skepticism about your work because of this sort of relationship between religion and prisons?
I insist that our classes are open to everybody, people of any religion or of none. Can come to our class, and we just teach people how to do asanas and how to be silent. And so there's no religious content per se in our teaching. So we simply don't have that problem at all. In fact, some chaplains ask us to go and help because they help them in their different groups, but they have to, of course, be able to meet us on our ground too, that we don't proselytize in any way. I think that everybody is longing for peace of mind, you know, and I think that is what we can bring to prisoners, and there's just something. There's something very special when you can build a little island within yourself and around yourself, even amidst all. A prison is a very noisy place, you know, and it's chaotic. Everybody seems, so many people seem to be hollering at one another there. And to be established in your heart that you have a quiet place there of your own and a place of peace, no money can buy that gift. And that's what we see, that's what becomes available to the prisoners who sit, yes.
I was reading about the work of Freeing the Human Spirit and was struck by a line, a powerful ego combined with poor self-image often leads to offending behavior.
Yes.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about what you mean by a powerful ego.
Oh, well, yes, Oriental spirituality would say that basically we have no ego, or, you know, very little in it, and that there's so much in our education system and just in our own customs of the country that puts a lot of emphasis on you or me or I, and so the ego builds up and kind of takes over, and it's a false self, and it's the false self then that is separate from everybody else. And that the need to mark off your own turf and to defend it become is part of the game. And all of that is built on a false premise that we are a separate ego. We share our spiritual equipment with everybody in the world and with nature itself. And so to build these dividing walls is very it's just false. And but it gives the need to defend or that we feel that need is a false ego. And so that has to be checked. And meditation is the very best thing because it leads towards it. It helps. I use the word garbage. We all have a lot of spiritual garbage, you know. That has to be kept in. We have to recognize it, but we also have to do something about getting rid of that garbage. And there's nothing better than meditation for that. So then the false ego. The power of that ego is lessened. You just don't feel this foreign relation with all other people. But eventually, the experience that we're heading for in meditation is the experience of our oneness with all of creation. So that that breaks down the walls of separation that strong ego will bring us to.
Now, I wanted to take this idea of the powerful ego and that relationship to self and meditation and connect it to more some of the systemic reasons and histories as to why people are in prison, for example, poverty, abuse, and colonialism, which often comes from relationships of systemic power. So I'm curious if you can comment on what connections you see between more of that systemic reality?
Yeah. I know. I would say the prisoner that I personally spent the most time with in England, and you know that his parents to begin with never should have married. Neither one was able to take on the responsibility of children, and that when this lad that I was helping, when he was two, his mother committed suicide. And his father, you know, kept him at home, but he wandered the streets a lot of the time, you know, and then he was taken and put into child care when he was about six, and then he was in trouble when he was 11 and 12. But it all went back to all this this unfortunate circumstance in which he was born and brought up, and poverty, oh, of course, you know, and, I mean, that goes without without saying, and the... I have never met a prisoner, you know, that was, mind you, I'm sure there are some, but most of them, you can trace it back to poverty and to cruelty from their parents, this kind of thing. There's always been a reason why.
What kind of things give you hope?
Well, just to see the prisoners being able to quieten their body and to quieten their mind, you know, and to eventually one of the loveliest things is they grow in gratitude, you know, at the end of a class and when you dismiss class, you know, so many of them when they start coming up rather shyly at first, but you know, saying thank you very much, I feel better. And then, you know, 6 months later, they're still saying that, and you can see the difference in them, you know. And that, so that gives, there's hope for everybody, I think. I imagine that there are some people, because of other circumstances, that are perhaps beyond helping very much. But most, by far, 95% of the people that I worked with are capable of improving and helping that. So that's a big hope, gives me hope too, and assurance that that they can be helped.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, well, this is wonderful to be able to share what we're doing, and hopefully one day we'll be out there and out in British Columbia working with in the prisons there too.
Well, I really appreciate being able to talk to you and hearing more about your work and some of your story in your life. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Emily, too, for inviting me to do that.
We have been speaking with Sister Elaine McInnes. She is a Zen master, Catholic nun, and has been working with prisoners teaching meditation for more than 20 years. Freeing the Human Spirit is the organization that she started here in Canada. You can find more about their work on their website. It's freeingspirit.com.